Evening, we'd like to conclude our study together of the subject of the Christian struggle with parenting. We finished up this morning looking at the need for changing the behavior. We're talking about correction and punishment. In Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, and again, I made mention at the end of the lesson this morning that if you wanted a handbook on how to raise a child, the book of God would be a good place for you to turn, especially in the book of Proverbs. In Proverbs chapter 22, in verse number 15, the text says, "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him." We have to change the behavior, and that's going to have to be done in a number of ways. This is one of the great debates in the so-called expert's rule, is the role of corporal punishment. Now, my dad never read that book, so he had his own understanding about it. But again, God is not saying that we should beat our children. He's not talking about child abuse. He's talking about changing the behavior, changing the actions of the child in order to get them to understand that it's incorrect. Firm, but must have some teeth in the rules. And I talked this morning about following through with what we say we're going to do. If you set a curfew for your children and they break the curfew, there ought to be a punishment. And if you say that if you come in late, then you're going to be grounded, then that's what you ought to do. You ought to do exactly what you say, or they're not going to take you seriously. And that's just the way it works. But you know what? I never had that problem when I was growing up. I knew that when my mother said something, I knew that that's the way it was going to be. And so I never had the problem of not understanding that there were going to be consequences if I did the wrong thing. And so you must be firm, and at the same time, you've got to balance it with love. You don't want to beat them down. You want to encourage them when they need to be encouraged. You need to praise them when they need to be praised, and you need to balance it all with love. You know, there's a lot of times that I can be honest that I went to bed mad at my parents, that I didn't like what they did. I didn't like what they would put me through. I thought they were being unfair, and I thought I was being treated in a terrible way. And you all have heard this, and I've heard it more than once in my life, that when my dad had to correct me for doing something I knew better not to do, he said, "Now this is going to hurt me worse than it does you." And I often thought in my mind as I was being disciplined that we ought to change places and see if that's true or not. But you know what? I never fully understood the meaning of that until I became a parent. And you know what? It does hurt you because you love your child. But you have to think of long term. And that's what a parent has to think of. He has to think about long term. Correction is but for a moment. You know, the Bible talks about that, that no correction is pleasant. Take your Bible out and turn to Hebrews chapter 12. The Bible even uses this terminology. In Hebrews chapter 12, and in verse 11, and really this chapter, especially verses 5 through 11, deal with this subject. But I want to look at verse 11. Hebrews chapter 12 and verse number 11. "No chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterwards, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." See, you're disciplining them not just for the moment. We're not doing it just for the moment, and nobody says it's pleasant. It's not pleasant for the child. It's not pleasant for the parent. But you're thinking long term. You're trying to correct, and you're trying to make a conscious effort to change the behavior of a child that's going in the wrong direction. I want to tell you something, ladies and gentlemen. It's much easier to change the direction of a child when he is young than have to try to change it when he is old, because there's going to be more resistance. If you do it when they're young, there's a good chance that you're not going to have to do much of it when they get older. That has been my experience. Now, just to give you an example, turn to Proverbs chapter 23 and verse 13 and 14. Proverbs 23, verse 13 and 14. Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. For you shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. Now again, this is talking about corporal discipline in the long term, in wanting to change the course of that child's behavior. Now I will tell you from a personal standpoint that every child is different on what, how you can get their attention. Our daughters, when we were growing up, especially Tara and Leslie, you just had to look at them. And they knew that their behavior was wrong. And it would change. But that didn't work with Keith. That didn't work with my son. That didn't work. I had to take a different tack with him. And every child is like that. But you find out what works the best in order to change the behavior, in order to get it in line with where you want that child to go. Now again, there comes a point, brethren, that when we train our children, that we need to begin to trust them more, that we need to begin to give them more, for lack of a better term, freedom to put into practice the things that we tried to teach them. But to do that, you're going to have to train them and mold them. And that's why Ephesians says to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. They have to be trained, and punishment, for lack of a better term, should fit the crime. Number three, we should control the child. Now, what do I mean by controlling the child? The rod of rebuke gives wisdom, but a child left to himself will bring shame to his mother. Children do not have wisdom. That comes later. That's something they learn. They learn by experience. They learn it by the things that they experience themselves. They learn it by the lessons they learn. Wisdom is something that comes along later. In early life, children do not have wisdom. That is something you have to train them to have. Number two, they need guidance and they need restriction. When I was a young man, let me tell you a story. I had a very good friend. His name was Tommy Taylor, and I grew up with him, and we went to school together, and we were very close friends. But we couldn't have had more different home lives. My parents always wanted to know where I was at, what I was doing, and whom I was with. Tommy's parents, they didn't care. They didn't care who he was with. They didn't care where he went. And I could tell you that he spent as much time in our home than he did his own home. Well, we would grow up and we would go in different directions. In 1974, I had to come back from Europe. I was in Europe in the military, and I had to come home because my brother was killed in an accident. And when I came home, it just happened to be, well, the month I was there, one of the weeks, my childhood friend, Tommy, he was on leave from the Army. And so he wanted to get together one night. So we got together for dinner one night, and he was at my brother's funeral. He was very sympathetic, and I appreciated that. He grew up with him. He knew him very well. But we were getting together, and we were talking. And of course, I would ask about his family. I would ask about his brothers, and I would ask about his mom and dad. He looked me right in the eye and says, "I haven't seen him." I said, "What do you mean you haven't seen him?" He says, "I don't see him." I said, "Well, why, Tommy?" He says, "Keith, of all people to ask me, why should you ask me? How much time did my parents have for me when I was growing up?" I said, "Well," he says, "don't try to explain it, Keith, you know." And I said, "Tommy, I understand that, but you're a man now, and that's your parents. And you can't undo the past. And you need to have respect for your parents." And again, he wasn't a Christian. He's not somebody who was raised in the church. That means nothing to him. He just said, "They showed how much they loved me when I was growing up. And now that I have a life, and now that I make the choice of how to use my time, that's not one of the places I'm going to use it." Now, you know what? That's sad. But that's because of the relationship that he had as a child. You know, I've been told by reading things that I read that children want guidance. They want discipline because it is an expression of love that they crave. A child that doesn't get any direction and doesn't get any correction or any discipline, that sends a mixed message to the child that the child is not really loved or he's not really cared for. And that's a terrible thing because that has disastrous effects. And so we need to give guidance and we need to give restriction. And we are controlled by the parents. What do I mean by that? The child doesn't run the show. Parents are the authoritative figure. Brethren, this is one of our greatest problems in society today, is we've got this backwards. It's not the child that has the authority, it is the parent that has the authority. I'm not a big Dr. Phil fan for a lot of reasons, but I was in a barbershop a few years back, and he had a mother on there with her 14-year-old daughter that was just out of control. And she was dictating the rules to her mother, what she was going to do, how she was going to do it. And she wasn't going to abide by what her mother wanted to do. And she was just at her wit's end. She didn't know what to do. What was Dr. Phil's advice? Well, you got to negotiate with your children. You got to kind of meet them halfway. And you get some of what you want and they get some of what they want. I want you to think about that for a moment. What kind of message does that send? Now, that doesn't mean you shouldn't listen to your children. But, brethren, in any kind of an organization, there has to be leadership. In any organization, and in the home, there's got to be leadership. There's got to be guidance. And if you got the child running things, then the house is amok. And where are they going to learn to respect authority? Brethren, there's three things that we need to teach our children. Number one, we need to teach them to love God. Number two, we need them to have respect for authority. And number three, we need to teach them to have mercy, compassion, and long-suffering for other people. They need to learn those principles at home. That's not the school's job. That's not society's job. That's the parents' job, to teach those values to our children. And brethren, if we don't teach them, I'll guarantee you somebody's going to fill in the blanks. Somebody is going to do that job if we fail to do it. And so we need to show who is in authority. Some children control the parent, and it's an awful result. A number of years ago, I was standing in the back after Bible study. Not here. It was another place. I was standing there, and there was a little 3 or 4 year old boy. He might have been 4 at the time. His name was, I think it was Jason. And his mom and dad, his dad had him on his lap, and he asked, his dad was saying, "Well, Jason, what did you learn in class?" "Oh, shut up, Dad." He was standing there, held in the tin. And he said, "Now, Jason, you don't want to talk like that." He says, "I'll talk any way I want." Now, we're talking about somebody that's 4 years old. And then I'm standing, I'm taking a step back, and he says, "Daddy, you're just stupid." I didn't know whether to take the kid out or to take the father out, because both of them had a problem. Now, let me ask you an honest question. If that's what he does at 4, what's he going to do at 14? Think about that. What's he going to do? You see, brethren, when we don't teach respect for authority in the home, it just escalates. Then it goes to the school. Then it goes to society. Then they have a hard time keeping a job because they don't respect somebody that tells them what to do. We have to teach these lessons. And when we allow the child to control the situation, we're not doing our job. And we're going to have repercussions from that kind of arrangement. Parents need to watch, and they need to know what their children are doing. It's not being nosy. It's being concerned. Knowing what is best. You know, they made a TV show about this way before my time called Father Knows Best. And a parent needs to know what's best. And knowing what's best and doing what's best sometimes is very far apart. Now, what do I mean? Knowing what is best and the wisest course isn't always easy. It's not so cut and dry as we think it is. Well, you know, if you go to the Bible, it's not going to say, now, when this situation comes, this is what you do. When this situation comes, this is the time. It doesn't work that way. And so you're going to have to make some decisions and judgments on what's the wisest course and the best course in a given situation. Let me give you an example. Here's the struggle. What to do and when to do it. When do you push? When do you step back? When do you do that? You know what a lot of us, how we learn that? Trial and error. We learn that. I have a theory, and it's just my theory. I'm the oldest in my family. Rita's the oldest in her family. I think the eldest are guinea pigs. I think all the good things they try on their eldest to see how it works out, and then it changes from there. That may not be right, but that's been my experience. And so you have to make a decision what to do and when to do it. Number two, when to command and when to condemn. When to console and when to comfort. You know, if you read Ecclesiastes chapter 3, it says there's a time for everything. In raising a child, there's a time to console them. There's a time to condemn what they're doing and rebuke them. There's a time to offer guidance, and there's a time to pull back and let them make the decision, and there's a time to console them and a time to comfort them. But you have to learn, and you're going to have to make judgment which is the wisest course. When to do for them and when to make them do it for themselves. That's a judgment call. How much do you do? My parents never cleaned up my room. My parents never did that. When I could walk and when I was able to take it out, they expected me to put it up. What I could do for myself, my parents expected me to do for myself. We need to learn that. We need to know when we have to do it for them and when we need to turn that over to them so that they learn responsibility. Which battle should I fight? Now I'm going to tell you, as a parent, this is tough. What battles do you fight? I always have a motto about this. The ones I know I can win. But there are some that you're not going to win. And so you're going to have to weigh that out. You're going to have to know when to get into that. When do you get into it? What do you make a battle? Sometimes we make a battle over something that's not worth making it a battle over. And we cause a problem that needlessly that we don't need to cause. But again, brethren, those are judgments that we have to make, and sometimes we're going to make the right one, sometimes we're going to make the wrong one. And I want to say one thing here before I move on. We need to, as parents, learn to admit when we blew it and when we're wrong. We're not always right because we're parents. I have made mistakes as being a parent. I have pushed when I should have stepped back. I've done that. And you know what? It doesn't take me long to figure out that I did the wrong thing. You know what will happen if you admit to your child that you made a mistake? They will grow in their respect for you. They will grow in their respect for you. But if you let your pride get in the way, one of the things that I disliked when I was young, and I would ask I didn't do this very often, but once in a while I got the courage up to ask why. And I was older. I was in my late teens when I got the courage to do that. And I only did it a couple times. But the answer I always got was, because I said so. And you know what? I didn't like that answer. And I always fought against that answer. But you know what? When I became a parent, I soon learned that there are situations where they won't understand why you're doing what you're doing. They won't understand why they need to do it this way. They just have to trust you. That's why you have to build trust between the parent and the child, because there are things that you're going to tell them that they're not fully going to comprehend why they've got to do it that way, but it will become very apparent later in their life. And so they have to learn to trust you because you love them and you know what's best. And brethren, this is the greatest struggle. When to do it, how to do it, and the wisest course to pursue. how to handle, what will affect the child in the future. A lot of things affect the child in the future. You know what? When I was raising my child, the older they got, the more I began to think about their future. I began to think about them going out on their own. I began to think about things that were going to affect their future. And it became very burdensome to me because I know that the world is not going to give them an easy time of it. And so we must prepare them for a world that is going in the wrong direction. And that's going to take time and wisdom. How to handle the struggle? Well, ask, what does the scripture say? Joshua, leading the children of God, after he begins to divide up the promised land, he goes to God and he asks, what do I need to do next? What direction should I take? We need to ask that question. You know, the Bible says, if any lacks wisdom, let him pray to God and ask, and he gives liberally. Do you need wisdom when you raise your children? When you're trying to give guidance to your grandchildren, do you need wisdom? Yes, you need wisdom. And so you need to pray that God gives you the wisdom to use it properly and use it in a way that will profit your child. For this reason, we also, since the day we heard it, do not cease to pray for you and to ask that you may be filled with the knowledge of His will in wisdom and in spiritual understanding. He will only do what with... Listen, here's what Brother Weaver said about this verse. He will do only that which is in his spiritual interest or what is good for him on a spiritual level. Some things, even right in themselves, are not best for the Christian. It does not necessarily take all the wisdom and spiritual understanding to know the difference between what's right and what's wrong, or the good and the bad. But it does require such wisdom and understanding to know the better over the good and the best over the better. And having recognized the difference, to make difference to then make the best choice whether to refuse the bad. Now all that's a fancy way of saying is that in some given situation, something that may be right may not be the best preferable course. Now what do I mean by that? I mean there may be something that's not wrong in and of itself, but in a given situation, it's not the best thing for you to do. Now, brethren, you and I have to make those kind of judgments. There's not a checklist in the Bible that tells you, well, this situation. Now, how do you make those decisions? You use the principles given in the Bible. You use the principles of giving your child training and guidance and respect and teaching them godly values. And then you do the best you can to make the decision in those given situations of what's best, what's good or what's better. And so again, this tells us that there's judgment that needs to be made. Seek wise counsel. Wise counsel isn't Dr. Spock. Wise counsel is God. That's the wisest counsel you can get. There's no counsel that's greater than God. And you know what? When I was a parent, there were times that I talked to older Christians who had already raised their children, had already been down the road that I'm going down. And I asked them for advice. Sometimes I took it, sometimes I didn't. But it was always helpful because it gave me something to think about. And so it's not wrong, but you better be very careful who you ask for counsel from. Because bad advice is no advice. Look at examples of those who've done well. Brethren, there were people, when I was growing up as a child, I watched how they raised their children. I was around them. I spent time with those kids. I learned a lot of things by watching the parents of my friends as I grew up. You know, I learned some things what to do, and I learned some things what not to do by watching the example of others. It's not wrong. That's why the Bible tells us that we're to be examples to others. Because shouldn't we as parents be able to set good, godly examples that other people can benefit from other than our own children? Look beyond the present. We have a saying. We've got to see beyond the forest for the trees. We've got to look beyond our nose. There are things that you decide for your child that can have long-lasting effects the rest of their life. It will follow them throughout their life. We need to think about that. The values that you teach them, the morals that you teach them, the priorities you try to exemplify in your life, all those have a profound effect on what direction our children will go. And so we need to look beyond the moment, and we need to think long term in dealing with this struggle. Teaching a child what is right. Children must be taught. Saturate them with the Word of God. You remember what Moses said about this in Deuteronomy? He says, teach it to them when they lie down. Teach it to them when they get up. Put it as frontlets before their eyes. And teach them. You know what that means? It means just to saturate them with the truth. And you don't just need to bring in the church. You need to be able to live what you believe. They need to see you living your faith. They need to see you pray. They need to see you when you have trouble. They need to see you pray. They need to see us showing expression of love for each other in marriages. To them, they need to see that. They don't need to read it. They don't need to just read it out of the Bible. They need to see it in their lives of the people that they love and they respect. They need to see it from their parents. Who? Fathers are responsible. Yes, you have to work. Yes, you got to bring home the bacon. Yes, you got to provide for your family. That's all true. But brethren, that passage says fathers are as equally responsible for the raising of their children as the mothers are. Fathers and mothers, train your child in the way it should go and teach and admonish them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. That takes time. Mothers should teach. They should teach them to love the parents and to love their siblings. That has to be taught. Mothers are instrumental in that because they're going to be with the mothers more than they are anyone else. Why? Fatal to assume that your child already knows something that you think is so obvious. Let me ask you a question. Is there any such thing as a bad question from a child? Do children have bad questions? You know what? I'd rather my children ask me a question that maybe on the surface seems idiotic, but I would much rather them to ask me than to ask anyone else. You see, we need not to assume that they know. You know, the people of God, the verse I got up here, Joel 2, the people of Israel just assumed they knew that God loved them. That they knew, that God knew that they loved him. No, he didn't know that. He didn't know that they loved him. Because they didn't show it, because they weren't obedient to him. So no, he didn't know it. Train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he will not depart from it. Train up a child the way he should go. How to raise a child. And when he is old, he will not depart from it. What he will be as an adult. You know, I'm told, if there's any, I don't know if there's any truth in this, but I've been told through the years that if you want to see the woman that a young man is dating, a young woman, and thinking about making that woman his wife, if you want to know what kind of wife she would be and what kind of mother she might be to your children, look at her mother. Because that will give you a very good understanding of what you might have as a wife and as a mother. Because whether we like it or not, we are a product of our environment. I've had people argue with me all my life about that, but facts do not lie. We are a product of our environment. And you know what I admire the most? I admire most young people who rise above their circumstance. And despite the terrible upbringing they had, they rise above it. Let me tell you something, brethren, that's a lot harder than you think. To rise above your circumstance. But sometimes children have to teach themselves because their parents failed to do it. It depends on the child, and it depends on the parents. This is a two-way proposition. It depends on the attitude of the child. It depends on the attitude of the parent. It takes both of them working together to get this accomplished. Now, the word train up means to mold and to shape. Dedicated by training. Strong says that's to initiate, to discipline, to dedicate, to train up. It's the same word translated dedicate. Training is dedicating a child to God. Isn't that what Hannah told? Isn't that what Hannah told God? You give me this child, and I will dedicate his life to you. Isn't that what Hannah promised to do? And that's exactly what she did. How? Guide them in what they need. What does your child need? He needs to develop a love for God. He needs to develop a love and respect for his parents. He needs to develop a love and respect for authority. He needs to develop a love and passion and understanding for other people other than himself. And he needs to be concerned with others other than himself. He needs to learn those lessons. Your children need to learn those lessons. It means to put something in the mouth. As a nurse gives an infant in order to prepare them for nursing. You have to put something in to get something back. If you want them to turn out right, you're going to have to invest some time and effort in order for that to happen. You're going to have to spend time, and you're going to have to put something in if you hope to get something out. From infant to a marriageable age. 1 Samuel chapter 4, verse 21, he was an infant. Genesis 21, a preteen lad, that was Isaac. Genesis chapter 37, that talked about Joseph. And in Genesis chapter 14, when Jacob and Esau were going to choose a wife. Every stage is different. Every stage has its own difficulties and struggles. And we have to be able to be flexible. But you know what? We have to do it while they're under our roof. Brethren, you remember I told you this morning how quick time flies? We only have our children for a short time. And we have to use that time in the best way possible to prepare them for life away from us. Now, you know what? We don't like to think about that. When we have our children home, we don't like to think about them going away. But eventually, that's going to happen. That's what we're training them to do. That's what we're preparing them to do. To go out on their own. To make their own decisions. To make their own homes. To make their own families. And we have to prepare them for that. Let me ask you a question honestly. If we as parents don't prepare them for that, who is going to do it? You want to trust the world to do it? How good a job are they doing at that? God-fearing in the way a child should go. The nurture of a child is such for the child's way. The manner of instruction ought to regulate itself according to the stage of life and its peculiarities. The method ought to be arranged according to degrees of development which mental and bodily life of the child has arrived at. That's a fancy way of saying that as a child grows, the way that you discipline him and the way that you guide him changes. You don't use the same method on a 5-year-old child that you do on a 15-year-old. It's got to change. It's going to evolve itself. You're going to have to be able to be flexible about that. And you got to learn as they grow and as they learn more, as they develop more, as they develop more independence. And that's what they're going to, we call that rebellion. It's not rebellion, it's independence. And you're going to have to channel that independence in the right way. Result. The results are it impacts the rest of their life. And so we need general statements are exceptions. You know what? This is not an absolute truth. You can give him godly values. You can teach them to have God as the priority. You can set an excellent example as a parent, an excellent example as a husband and father. And you know what? Somebody in the world that they choose to be their mate could undo everything that you've done. It happens. It happens. And it can happen. And so we need to prepare ourselves. Now, the last point of this lesson is not last because it's not important. It's last because it is very important. And it has to do with their friends. It has to be with the association that our children have. Because, brethren, we live in a very diverse society. And you know what? When I was away from home, my mom and dad wanted to know the kind of home I was going to be in with my friends. They knew the parents of the people that I associated with. When I was young, my parents knew who the parents of my friends were. And there were some homes, because of the home life, I was not allowed to be in their home. Now, was that unfair? No, my parents were trying to protect me. They wanted to make sure I was safe. And also, that I would not undo all the things that they were trying to teach me. Now, what does it do if I'm teaching my child one way and I get friends who live a completely different way and I'm in their home with their parents and I have a whole different set of rules than my parents do? And I like it there because I got more freedom. Not as much restriction. I like that. But that, what can that do with my training? We need to know about their friends. Close friends draw close and become like them. Brethren, people have influence. Do you know some people have a great sense of influence over others? Do you know that? Do you know there are people that can greatly influence you because of the type of people they are? They just kind of, people magnetize to them. They're like a magnet and people are drawn to them. And so they have a lot of influence over people. Psalms chapter 1, verse 1 through 3 talks about this. And Galatians chapter 2. You remember when Peter was eating with the Gentiles and then the Jews came in? And he saw the circumcision come in, and then he stepped away and he separated himself from the Gentiles because he didn't want the Jews to think bad of him. What happened because of that? Because of his influence on Barnabas, because how much Barnabas respected him, he followed the same action. He did the same thing. Why? Because of the influence that Peter had in his life. Do you understand that there are people? They can be friends, they can be colleagues, they can be co-workers, they can be people they go to school with, they can be a number of people that can have a profound influence on your children. But you know what? That can work another way too. Your children can have a profound influence on other people. And you know what? That's what God always prefers. He always prefers that the influence be with the Christian and not the person in the world. So we need to keep a close eye on the type of children and associates that our children hang around. We need to take note of that, and we need to recognize that. But that's not being nosy. That's just being concerned. Do you want, as a parent, do you want someone to undo what you're trying to teach your child? Do you want somebody to undo that step by step, break it down? Is that what we want? No, that's not what we want. And so we need to understand about influence. You know what? I'm not going to read all these. But you can go through every one of these passages. And this is on the website. And you can read this. And you know what all these passages have in common? They talk about the warning and the danger of bad influence. Let me give you a couple examples. Who did Ahab marry? Jezebel. What did Jezebel do? She introduced Baal worship into Israel that eventually would bring down the whole nation of Israel. One woman's influence. What does her name even mean to this day? Jezebel, evil, personification of evil. What did God hope when he made Israel his chosen nation? What was his hope? His hope was that nation would love God, would follow God, and they would influence others by what they saw to them to learn about God, and that they would become more like people of God. But what happened? What happened was it went haywire. Instead of Israel influencing men and women to learn about God and to be God-like, they allowed the influence of the world to draw them away from God and ended up, in the end, destroying them. You know what they did? They didn't pay attention to who they... Do you know why God, in the beginning, in the old law, said that they were not to marry women and men of certain nations? He said, those are nations that I don't want you to intermarry with. I don't want you to make treaties with. I don't want you to have any relationship. Now, was he doing something today? Today, that would be called racism today. But what was God trying to do? God was trying to protect them from the danger of the influence that he knew would lead them away from him. Did God know what he was talking about? Yes, he did. And because they didn't listen, they intermarried, they made treaties, they didn't drive them out of the land, they left them there, they lived among them, they followed a lot of their customs. What did it bring? It ended up destroying them as a nation. You know, I told you the story. I told you the story about my cousin. And I want to close with that. There are people in your life, because of the relationship that you have and the love that you have for them, can have a very profound effect on you in decisions that you make that you normally would not make. And I had that relationship with my cousin, and I still do to this day. But it's a very different relationship, because there came a point when he wanted me to go in a direction that I knew I didn't want to go in, that he went in. And he continues to move down that path today, and that's not where I wanted to go, but he had such a profound influence on my life that if I'd have stuck with him, I kept letting him pressure me to go down that road, I might have done that. And I knew that. I knew it because I knew how much I respected him, how much I loved him. I knew that. So finally, I had to step back, and I had to say that if we want to remain friends, if we want to remain in this friendship, you're going to have to quit trying to get me to do things that I don't want to do. Because if you persist, then I'm going to break this off. Because you have too much influence over me. He never did it again. And we're best friends to this day. But we've chosen two different courses. But I knew, and brethren, and ladies and gentlemen, you all know exactly what I'm talking about. People that can have a profound influence on you to make you go in the wrong direction, you've got to take a stand. And you've got to realize the bigger picture. And so, is it a struggle to raise children? Yes. Is it a profound struggle? At times. And I've told people this my whole life. Being a parent is the most rewarding thing that you will ever do, and also can bring you the greatest heartache that you've ever experienced. There's both ends of the spectrum being a parent. But what God wants us to do, as he does in everything, find the balance. Find the middle ground. Find the balance. I want to leave you with this thought. God gave this job to no one in raising our children, but the parents who brought that child into the world. That job isn't for school, it's not for society, it's not for babysitters, it's not for child care. The direction your child will go, God put it in your hands when he put that child in your hands. When he blessed you with that child, he gave you a dual responsibility to train, to guide, to nurture, and to teach that child the things that it would need to know in order to function in the world and to give them back to God. And may God help us. Now, our children are gone, and they're on their own in their own family. And now I've got another job. Now I've got 7 grandchildren. And my job is to try to set the best example and influence that I can for them, to teach them the need for God in their life, and to back up the things that their parents teach them, and even sometimes teach them some lessons that their parents need to be teaching them. But why do we do that? Because we love them. The love of a child. It's just hard to explain, isn't it? But every one of us who are parents understand it. Every night, before I go to bed, I pray for my children. As long as I draw breath, I will do that. For my children and for my grandchildren. Because you know what? I'm worried the direction this world's going in. But the only way that we're ever going to fix it is we're going to have to give people a better course to pursue. And the way we do that is we train young men and young women to be good mothers, to be good fathers, to be good husbands, to be good wives, and to give people an example of a better way. And ladies and gentlemen, God has the best way. And we need to mold ourselves to His thinking instead of the world. If you're here tonight and you're not a Christian, we don't want to close this service without giving you an opportunity to become one. If you are a Christian, you need to make some correction in your life. We're here to help you do that. If we can help you in any way, we bid you to come forward as together we stand. As we sing.